Hello, I'm John Kelly, and this is a podcast of Mystery Train. For rights reasons, the music is shorter than in the original programme. Mystery Train hits the rails Sunday to Thursday at 7 p.m. on RTE Lyric FM. It's a track called Radio, and it comes from Katie Kim, who actually is my guest tonight, because on Sunday on Mystery Train we get someone to pick all the tracks, and tonight it is Katie Kim. Great to have you here, Katie.
Thank you for having me.
Are you keeping well?
I'm doing very well.
Extremely busy as ever, I guess.
I'm trying to be, trying to keep busy, otherwise I go mad.
Well, thanks for doing this. I'm looking down the list. I tend not to look at these lists in advance, so I can enjoy the night like everybody else.
Okay, good.
And it looks impressive. Not surprised, because I know your music, and I suspect your tastes would be I hate using the word eclectic, but they are eclectic.
Well, I'm a little scared as well.
Don't be scared. Nothing can possibly go wrong.
I feel like I'm a kind of a magpie with music and songs, and I'm not a huge collector. So I can't talk in depth about a lot of these people's, you know, back history, but I can talk about how much I like the songs
them. Yeah, but by that, do you mean that you wouldn't necessarily have, you know, 35 albums by Bob Dylan? You might have the one or two songs that you like.
Yeah.
But aren't all young people like that nowadays?
Yeah, see, I feel like more when I was growing up, I did, and I used to collect them. But nowadays, it's just all fallen to the side, and I'm kind of more attracted by soundtracks a lot these days, because I just tend to go to the cinema a lot these days, and I'm more kind of taken in by soundtracks now. But yeah, I'm not a great collector anymore.
Well, also, to be quite honest, it's very hard to keep up.
It is hard to keep up.
If this wasn't my job, I don't think I'd be able to keep my foot on the pedal all the time and get the new album by such and such every time.
I used to work in a record shop in Waterford called BPM Records, and when I used to work there, it was the most prolific time of collecting that I ever had. And then when I stopped working there, then it kind of dwindled a little bit.
And it's a dangerous thing too to become, and mercifully people probably think I am, but I'm not a completist. I don't chase every last thing, because that way lies disaster.
Okay, because that's what I'm scared of. I'm scared that you're going to know way more about everybody here than I do. But
no, not at all. So your first choice, Katie, is what?
Okay, I'm going to go for Cat Power, because I remember in Waterford, actually, a friend of mine, Anna Jordan, she has this pub that's actually still there called Jordan's Pub. It's on the Quays in Waterford, and it's this old pub that time has never changed it. But she had a really great music collection, and she introduced me to a lot of great music, and it really reminds me of discovering the Covers record by Cat Power when it came out, and she put it on for me, and I think it was Sea of Love that I first heard. And I was just a little bit mesmerised by who this woman was, and her voice, and this gravel, and this tone.
And hearing songs done in a completely different way for the first time can be a real revelation, can't it? And a liberation as well.
And simple, and very minimal, and not showy in any way. And, you know,
because some of the songs that she covered were sort of sacred objects, you know?
Yes.
Satisfaction.
Things that you probably wouldn't recognise if you listened to them first time around, until you kind of heard her saying, you know, Satisfaction. But I picked this song from Moonpigs because for me, when I first listened to Moonpigs, it's not an easy record to listen to, I don't think. If you're going to get into Cat Power, it's kind of a difficult record to listen to if you're more familiar with her more recent work. But The Colours and The Kids is kind of the only piano track on the record, and it was the first one that kind of just made me go, oh, it's beautiful. So I'm going to pick that.
Gorgeous song there from Cat Power, Colours and The Kids. The first choice of Katie Kim is with me in studio tonight, picking all the records. Katie, you mentioned Waterford there just in passing, but you were actually born in London, is that right?
Yeah, my parents moved to London and had me over there in 83. And then, my mother got homesick. And then in 86, they decided to come back just in time for the recession. So
so you were three. You might have a vague memory of London, so possibly.
I don't know. I think I'm just making up memories. Yeah. I think I have a vague memory of falling down a ladder and injuring myself terribly, but that's about it.
What were you doing up a ladder at the age of three?
It's on an adventure.
Okay. So you came back to Waterford then?
Came back to Waterford, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And what did your folks do? Were they musical or...?
Well, my mother used to play in a band when she was younger, and she was maybe when she was a teenager, in a band called Circle, which is quite, which my friends find quite funny now, because Circle is kind of a I don't know if they're Swedish, but a doom kind of band now. But she used to play in a band called Circle, kind of doing country covers and stuff like that, sneaking out of her bedroom window, and because her mother would never let her do it.
It's the ladder thing again.
Yeah, yeah, adventures, yeah. So she used to do that. My father, no, he's just a music fan. He loves Dori Previn and he loves Leonard Cohen and that kind of thing. But my dad is a plumber. My mother was just constantly opening up businesses, you know, all the time, yeah, finding things to do.
And do you remember when you were pretty small, you know, from three on in Waterford, do you remember music in the house? Do you remember what was being played in the house or on the radio?
I remember we had a big old hi-fi. I remember, no, it was kind of a pop house. I had two sisters as well. So
older sisters?
Older sisters. Yeah. So there was a lot of that. I suppose, yeah, a lot of the Carpenters, actually. Remember crying. Honestly, I do remember sitting in, I used to share a bedroom with my sister, and I remember listening to Karen Carpenter and bawling, crying, thinking, like, why is she dead? It's not fair. And
such,
I remember,
great songs they wrote.
Amazing songs. Incredible. I loved songs. The Carpenters, yeah. And yeah, I think that's kind of it. Yeah, and like I said to you earlier, then Mariah Carey came into my life, and I was just fascinated that somebody could sing like that. Whitney Houston's The Bodyguard soundtrack. That was huge when I was a kid growing up.
I think we've now perfectly situated what age you are and when you were going to the cinema and when you were that age. So that's a very clear picture without me actually asking. So there we are.
Yes.
Now, what about, you know, your own sense of music? When did you first sing, do you think?
I don't know. I do remember it was The Bodyguard soundtrack and loving it so much, and thinking that I wanted to sing like that. And I do remember getting like a couple of notebooks and trying to write down songs, but never really singing. But not really. Not until my mother got me that guitar at 14. Everything before that was just, I remember just kind of singing along to everything. And then I think my mother noticed that she saw me writing down kind of poems and things. And she decided to get me a guitar when I was 14. And then she taught me like the basic E, A and G.
She actually got you the guitar as opposed to you asking for a guitar.
She bought it for my birthday.
Ah.
Yes.
So the guitar was a surprise.
It was a surprise.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I didn't ask for it.
Because I think it's often the other way around. The kid, well, thinking of boys here, they want a guitar. They want,
yeah,
they
want the electric guitar.
And they save up for it or
a
whatever.
Drum set or something.
Yeah. Yeah. But so your mother presented you with the guitar. That was a smart move.
I don't know if I really understood that I could just get a guitar and write my own songs. I think because I was listening to people like Whitney Houston, I just thought, God, how am I going to write songs like Whitney Houston? I mean, I'd need like a whole band and I'd need a record producer. And my mother went, no, you just, you know, I'll just teach you three chords on a guitar and off you go. So I made her life hell. I made her listen to everything that I wrote at the time. God, when I think about it, what she must have listened to, and she's a great woman for doing it. But yeah, then I just kept writing. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll come back to that in a minute. Your next choice is... this is not Whitney. It's not Whitney
Houston.
Not really
tying in with Whitney Houston or The Bodyguard. I'm going to go for Slint and Good Morning, Captain.
From Kid's original motion picture soundtrack, the choice of Katie Kim is with me in studio tonight. Didn't see that one coming so early, Katie, but there it is.
No.
Slint. Because you were,
but also from Spiderland, which is the album that they brought it out on, as well.
Yeah. And Spider, I forget what year that was, but
91.
Yeah, because you were merrily up to this point talking about Whitney Houston, really.
Yes.
And Mariah Carey.
But I wasn't introduced to Slint until I saw Kids.
I suppose not. So listen, back to the songwriting. Your mother gave you the guitar. She spotted something there. She just spotted you making notes and noodling. So she gave you. The doodling, sorry, whatever, the scribbling, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yes.
So she bought you the guitar, taught you three chords, and you said that you remember her listening to what you were writing.
Forcing her to listen. Well, no, probably not forcing her.
Have you any idea what you're in your memory now, what you were writing about?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I still don't know what I write about, to be honest.
Yeah. Were you basing your songs on any other songwriter or any other type of song you'd heard?
It's just so difficult to say. I mean, it's such a long time ago. When I started doing this, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think who else I was listening to at the time. Oh God. There's no judgments here in this. There's no judgments in
no,
this room.
No, there's no judgment here, no.
Yeah, I remember Jewel had brought out her album as well. And for a young girl with a guitar at 14, I thought that this was amazing. Now, I mean, she's kind of gone off into doing this kind of country music style stuff that I don't, I never really listened to anything she ever made after that first album.
I interviewed her back then, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, I just remembered.
I really loved that first album, and I thought there were some beautiful songs on there. So I think maybe she would have been a bit of an influence at the time. And then, like I said, I was a huge Karen Carpenter fan as well. So maybe there was bits of that thrown in.
And what about your mother when she handed the guitar? Did she also hand you, for the sake of argument, Bob Dylan's greatest hits or something like that? No.
No, she didn't. She just showed me the three chords and said, "Off you go." And I think that I really milked those three chords, I have to say. But then again, so do a lot of people. They can create a whole career out of three chords, I suppose.
Yeah, make a list.
Yes, you can.
Let's get back to your songwriting. Mm-hmm. When did you first show a song to somebody else apart from your mother?
I don't know how this happened, but there's a tiny pub in Waterford that's now closed down. And I don't know how it happened. Maybe my mother got it for me. But they used to do kind of, they used to just invite people to come along and sing a couple of songs on a guitar. And then a friend of mine, Aisling, she used to play as well. And then the two of us got together and we used to do gigs together in a place called The Kings.
Did you enjoy the experience of performing these songs?
No, I used to nearly physically be ill before. I used to go on stage all the time. I'm still getting over that. I'm still quite a nervous player, not half as bad as I used to be, but no, it didn't come easily.
And why did you do it then?
Because I thought that I had, that's what musicians did, you know, they have to just do that. And I hadn't been aware of the whole recording process yet. And it was only later in life that I got Cool Edit Pro, which was a radio editing software, and started recording with that. And then I was like, oh, OK, this is where I'm most comfortable.
Yeah.
Experimenting and layering and adding effects and things like that. And then I was like, OK, this is great. I way prefer this to playing live. So I kind of delved into that instead in future. I just did it, though, because you also got to be around people who were other musicians, and it was a nice community in Waterford. There was lots of musicians down there, and it was just a really nice, friendly, family-like community, people playing down there.
No, I always think it's interesting because a lot of musicians and a lot of actors will tell you, actors in particular, how tough it is for them to get up and do what they do.
Yeah.
Particularly at the beginning. I mean, they really found it horrible and stressful. And it was contrary to their, seemed to be their nature even to even do it. So you can't help wondering why make that commitment, you know?
I know, and I don't really particularly consider myself like an introvert really at all, but I definitely don't. I'm not the kind of person that likes, apart from my mother, who likes to say, oh, this is my new song, have a listen to it, this is great. You know, I find that really embarrassing.
Yeah.
So getting up and singing your songs and waiting for an applause at the end always seemed fairly bizarre to me. But I got on with it and I did it anyway. So.
Now, if you're making your own music at 16, how does that impact on the kind of music you're listening to in terms of your pals at school? Because presumably most of your pals at school aren't writing their own music. And
well,
they're listening.
I left school at 16.
Oh, did you?
I did. And I was...
16 these days is probably quite young, isn't it, to leave school?
Yes, but I also moved out at 16 as well. So I was quite independent at that age. My mother let me do it. She said that I just had to finish my junior cert and that was what I had to do because she knew that I wanted to be a musician. And she said, well, if you're going to do it, then you're going to have to work at it and do it. But
and you didn't go anywhere else after school, that's what I mean. You didn't go to another college or another place of education, no?
Regretfully, I didn't go to college, but
do you regret that? Yeah,
I do, kind of. I mean, well, nowadays I do because you know, if I'd known then what I know now, I suppose about the music industry, I suppose, it probably would have been better to have a backup plan. I can always go back to college if I want.
So your mother was okay with this, yeah?
Yeah, well, it took a lot of convincing. She said, you know, that I might regret it, and she would prefer that if I stayed the extra 2 years. But I also had dreams of moving away and doing all these things. And I wasn't particularly happy in school. You know, I wasn't a very, you know, like I had lots of friends there and all of that. But I think I was probably not there more than I was there. Mm-hmm. So And she knew that. And she kind of said, OK, look, just do your junior cert. But, you know.
And when you moved out, where did you go?
I moved out with my friend and just we moved into our apartment in Waterford.
In Waterford.
I didn't end up moving to...
you weren't quite born
the United States or anything.
Just yet, yeah.
No, okay. No.
The question that I asked that brought up that answer that you left school at 16, which I didn't know, was to do with the influence of your peers when you're 15, 16, 17, what they're listening to. Were you then freed up from all that? I mean, or were you still listening to what all 16-year-old girls at that time were listening to?
To be honest, when I think about like my peers at the time, I don't think really... I grew up with a huge musical surrounding, apart from those few gigs that I used to do in the bars and things like that. But it wasn't until I'd met a different group of friends, maybe when I was around 18 or 19, that we all started sharing music and making tapes and doing all that. I think it all happened for me maybe a little bit later in life. It didn't happen for me when I was when I just got the guitar, where everyone was like, "Oh, you have to listen to this." I wasn't really surrounded by those type of people.
And what was that scene like that when you were 18? What sorts of bands were being
like we were talking about earlier on,
exchanged.
Like Flint and Sonic Youth and Dinosaur Jr. and Pavement and all of that. That's
pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, yeah. And getting mixtapes from people and just being introduced to loads of different stuff. Getting into Nine Inch Nails and really, really got into Nine Inch Nails quite a bit. All that stuff. I thought I was a bit of a rocker for a while.
And
I was a bit of an imposter, I think.
And yet you're... Well, you see, there's always, for everybody, an element of affectation
in
the music that you profess to like at a certain time. Even if it's quite possible you love it, but at the same time, there's an element of, awareness.
Well, it was that whole culture, you see, when I met those people. Actually, no, I'm kind of lying a little bit, because when I was 16, I did have a boyfriend who was kind of a skater, and we were talking about Kids earlier, and we'd watched Kids together, and that's where that soundtrack came from. So I suppose I'm kind of forgetting about that group of people as well.
Well, everybody you meet has some kind of an influence, even if you meet them for 5 minutes.
Yes.
Your next choice is not Nine Inch Nails, but I'd say
I'd say
he would admire them. Music from Arvo Pärt.
Yes. Now,
where did you find Arvo Pärt?
Okay, so I can't really remember, and also I'm gonna disclaimer. I've listened to a lot of Arvo Pärt's music after I discovered Fratres, but. Nothing ever really punched me in the face like this did. So the only memory I have is when I was in Waterford, I remember moving into, I lived by myself a lot in Waterford, which I really miss in Dublin now.
Hang on, you miss Waterford? You miss
really
living
miss
by yourself?
Living by myself. It was such a great time.
Yeah, okay.
But I lived in this
You
old...
might wish to withdraw that remark at some point.
Well, my flatmates, I think we all feel the same. I remember living in this old studio. It used to be an old studio and they'd turned it back into an apartment. So it was covered with carpet. You could hoover the walls like it was a brown apartment. But I have a really vivid memory of finding this on the internet and just listening to it really early, well, late in the night or early in the morning, however you want to look at it, and just listening to it over and over and over again and being in floods of tears and just still to this day, it still affects me the same way. I just think it's the most just staggering piece of music. I just love it. I really do.
Fratres, Arvo Pärt. And that's Fratres, music from Arvo Pärt, which is the choice tonight of Katie Kim, who's with me in studio picking some great music. It is gorgeous, that, Katie, isn't it?
Oh, so beautiful. Oh,
beautiful. And did you, by any chance, then pursue the music of Arvo Pärt then and find more of it, because there's a lot of stuff.
I know, it's vast.
Yeah.
It's vast. I did. And I used to cycle around and listen to it, on the headphones and everything, and I do. But it was mostly, that's kind of it ended up in the background for me. This one is the kind of the one that I pounced on.
And then the Arvo Pärt then started, people like Björk started to name check Arvo Pärt and people like that. So his name started to spread out outside of that world.
Yeah.
But it is gorgeous, gorgeous music. Now, did listening to that kind of music have much influence then on what you were doing? And I'm thinking of the way that you've recorded music in a very imaginative way, as opposed to just, you know, it's just you and a band or whatever the case may be. You know, detuning guitars and using all sorts of effects and coming at it sideways a lot of the time. Do you think it was that was already in you, or was that as a result of your listening, do you think?
I mean, it has to be a result of me listening. I mean, it has to come from somewhere, maybe. I don't think it just, you pull it out of thin air. But during that time in that carpet apartment that I was talking about, that was when I did have recording software and equipment. And I did get my friend Shane at the time to come in and play violin on 12 with me. So I think I probably was very influenced by it.
And your piano playing was very minimalist or
yeah, well, I still
sparse.
Can't really play piano very
so,
well.
So are you saying that's because of limitation rather than choice?
Absolutely because of limitation, yes.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's the same thing with Cat Power.
Yeah, limitation can work for artists.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I think Cat Power gave me a lot of confidence as well, because I said, oh, you know, she doesn't sing like Whitney Houston. She doesn't, well, by that time I was a little bit over the Bodyguard soundtrack, I have to say. Yeah, it was quite liberating to listen to people like Cat Power because it wasn't intimidating music, you know. Like, I was also a big fan of like Stina Nordenstam, but I kind of found her kind of too much of a mysterious figure for me. And also she had all these really beautiful intricate arrangements on her records that I just thought were way outside my ability. So people like Cat Power, and it made it seem like, oh, she doesn't sound like, you know, she's a classical player or so. It gave me a lot of confidence to be able to just go, oh, these chords sound nice, so I'll just record that and hopefully it sounds okay.
But you also, as you said earlier, we're dealing with the Pro Tools and how to use all that machinery.
Yes.
And you use that to great effect, because suddenly now you can loop things and you can do all of that.
Yeah.
Was that all self-taught?
Yes. All self-taught. I think if you just put you know, sit at home for hours and hours a day and, you know, don't go out socialising for a while, you can learn anything, you know.
Now, of course, what happens is if you're at home on your own making this kind of music, you get deeper and deeper into it and probably further and further away from ever having a hit record. You know what I mean? You were never trying to write the pop song, were you? No. Sort of the hit song.
No, I don't think so. I didn't ever think that I was ever going to get like daytime radio play or anything from what I was making. I didn't write with any intention of making hits. It was just making them for the sake of making them, and hopefully I would get onto some of the radio shows that I used to listen to late at night, like Donald's Show and things like that at the time. So, yeah.
Your next choice is Lou Reed. Someone who had lots of hits but also didn't care.
Yeah, this is kind of a roundabout Lou Reed song. This is why I'm getting around to this, is because it actually, I was a big Velvet Underground fan, and I didn't really latch on to Lou Reed a lot, although certain songs that Lou Reed used to record, like I really thought that his voice just sounded, his music sounded like a really warm, lovely hug, and I loved that sound. But this song, actually, I'm a huge Laurie Anderson fan. And I was going to suggest to play a song called "The Speed of Darkness" by Laurie Anderson. It's a piece that she does live back in, I think it was 1999 or something. But I didn't. The sound quality wasn't great. But she made this documentary called "Heart of a Dog" a few years ago, and I was really blown away by that documentary. I was really moved by it, and at the very end, for the credits at the end of that film, is this Turning Time Around song. And I think just to top off the whole experience of watching the documentary, this song really just completely floored me. And, you know, their relationship in general is really fascinating to me. And
and in that film, I mean, it's about the death of the dog.
But really, there's
also... But it's really about Lou.
Yeah, yeah.
And he doesn't appear in it at all until the end.
No, just a little bit at the end. Yeah. And then that song happens. And, so emotional to watch, but... I just love her, and I love the two of them, and I love this song, yeah.
And there's Lou Reed, a song called Turning Time Around, which comes from the album on Ecstasy, it was called. Fine record too, but Katie Kim Welch loves that song. Typical, you don't have the album though.
Don't have
That's it. The way people work nowadays, and I don't understand that.
It's because of the film, you see.
I know, but still, you know, I like... in my day.
I know.
You bought the album.
I'm ashamed of
and
myself.
And you read all the Sleep Notes.
I know.
Over and over and over again.
I know.
So you love Lou and Laurie.
I do love them,
yeah.
Yes.
No.
I don't know them, but you know.
Now, when you were putting together your own music then for the first time, what about getting your music out there then? Because, when I started hearing about you, it was often from other musicians. It's like there was a... I'm not sure it was an actual group of musicians, but there seemed to be a community of musicians somehow. At least there appeared to be, and you would have been mentioned in the same breath as certain other musicians. So were you making contact with other people, or were they coming and finding you? Because it is a solitary thing to sit in your room making music on a machine.
Well, I think that might have happened because my boyfriend at the time, he really was instrumental in making me record an album, and I did record that album, and then he made me post it all up and send it off to people, and he posted one to Donald Dean, and Donald played it, and I remember sitting there and this, because I used to listen to Donald's show every night anyway, so and he played it, and we were finally on the radio, and it was great, and we were all delighted because really admired that. The two of us loved that show. So then I think it just kind of went from there. Then I decided to move to Dublin, and at the time, actually, yeah, I got to know David Kitt and I got to know Patrick Kelleher, yeah. And
yeah, these are the people I'm thinking of. Yeah,
yeah. So at that time, all these people were making music. Loved Patrick Kelleher's album. And Siobhan from Young Hearts Run Free was putting on these events. I think I went down to one in the Clarendon House, was the first one, and it was crazy mental, packed. Everyone, lots of musicians there. Margie Lewis was playing as well, actually, down there. School Tour, which was another one of Patrick Kelleher's bands. And so, we all just ended up kind of playing in the same circles and getting to know each other. And yeah, they were good days. I miss those days. Yeah.
Next choice.
Is this Neil Young?
Mm.
Okay. So, could pick any Neil Young song, but I'm obviously going to pick the one that's from a Tom Hanks film.
Yeah, but there are several. Okay. Even Neil Young. You could come in with a nice, gentle country folk song. You could come out with thrash metal, really.
Exactly. But
sorry, it's grunge, isn't it?
This is. So I'm going to treat this. See, I'm trying to treat all of these songs like these are songs that mean something to me and have met. They have like I have memories of these. So this ties into my poor mother is. Going to get a bashing in this.
We should have got your mother on the show.
We should have, yeah.
That's
but she, I remember her bringing me, because I looked this up. I forgot to put the year down. I think it was probably 93 Philadelphia came out, the film. So I would have been 10. And I remember her bringing me to see it. And I actually looked it up because I didn't, to see it, what it was. And I think it might have been a 15. So I can't remember anyway. But anyway, I got in and... just being who doesn't bawl crying at that film, but at the end then I think the Neil Young song came on and wondering I thought it was at first I thought it was an old woman who sang the song for years when I was 10, and then I found out that it was a guy called Neil Young, and then I ended up buying a lot of his albums. Actually, I did buy his albums and I did read those liner notes, but I'm going to go with Philadelphia because it was my introduction to him as a 10-year-old child. So
Neil Young and Philadelphia, the choice of Katie Kim, who's with me in studio tonight. Katie's picking all the tracks. We'll be right back after this break. And this is Mystery Train on RTE Lyric FM, the Sunday night special. And picking the tracks tonight is the musician Katie Kim. And Katie's so far picked music from Cat Power, Slint, Arvo Pärt, Lou Reed and Neil Young. And we've talked about Waterford. And we talked about making music and how she got going on as a musician because her mother bought her a guitar. You didn't even ask for it. That's still sticking with me, that, because a lot of times it's people begging their parents, buy me a guitar.
I never but really anyway, about that.
And your mother's had quite a few mentions too, actually, tonight.
She has.
Yeah, her and Cat Power.
Yeah.
Seem to be the twin influences on your life so far. Now, your next musical choice, Katie, is Scott Walker.
Yes.
Now, again, there are several Scott Walkers. Which one did you find first?
Well, I'm sure subconsciously I was listening to The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore throughout my youth, I'm sure, without realising it. But it was BPM Records, again, where I was working. They had a very eclectic collection of music in there. And I remember, first of all, just loving the aesthetic of the albums. He had his whole section, and loving the aesthetic of the albums, and then trying to put it on one morning in work and my boss just running down and just going, "Katie, no, just bring it home. Like, don't, you know, don't be playing Scott Walker in here." So I did, and it was, I think I brought home Tilt and The Drift, and they were terrifying, but I absolutely loved them.
Yeah, well, tell me about that. What, I mean, I love those records too, right? Mm. And I understand why, you know, 9 cats out of 10 really don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
What is it for you that appeals to you in music as deliberately difficult as that?
I think because it's quite visual, and harking back to me kind of loving a kind of a, I suppose, coming to music through film sometimes as well, a kind of expansive sound, and I can't explain it. I don't know. I just find it interesting to listen to how people come up with their ideas, and especially with him, and not really understanding or realising who he was when I listened to these albums. And then I think it wasn't actually too long after I listened to them that documentary came out. I think it was a couple of years later. And I went, oh my God, forget it.
It's kind of impossible with his music, this phase of Scott Walker, to kind of figure out where the piece of music begins.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you hear a song and you know it's begun with a few chords on the guitar or a vamp on the piano or something.
Yeah.
This stuff seems to come out of nowhere.
It does. And like you were saying earlier about, I mean, I don't think a lot of it sounds like it has to be made by professional musicians. It's just a lot of experimenting and banging and pulsing and, well, apart from, you know, the huge orchestras that he has involved.
But I mean, in that documentary, there's a huge section about him punching the side of beef.
Yes, but Nine Inch Nails, you know, used to do that as well. Mm. But the punching of the ham and the punching
the ham,
of
sorry.
The...
Yes, let's just be specific about this. It was in fact pork. Yeah,
it was. I've actually heard that come up a few times. I think it might have been before Scott Walker. I think the punching of flesh used to be, people used to be mad into.
Well,
in the 90s.
They'd use that in the movies, though. As the Foley artist would use that for fights and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, that's
but,
true.
But he spent an inordinate amount of time getting just the right sound.
Yes, he said. Yes, he seems like a complete perfectionist. Yeah, he does. But then I loved that he discussed in that documentary about how he would spend all this time on it, maybe years, and then that's it. You know, he'll listen to it once on really, really great speakers, and then he doesn't want to hear it again. And I you know, that would be my preference with my own music as well, I have to say.
You're going to hear some of your own in a moment.
Oh, God.
After Scott Walker, though. Which song do you want?
So I'm not after going for anything off the Tilt. I finish a lot of my shows now with Farmer in the City, and I've just realised how many Scott Walker fanatics there are out there, because after a lot of my shows that I do, that people come up and say, "Oh my God, you did that Scott Walker tune, like, do you know, you know, you should listen to this if you don't know this." And but I'm not going to pick that because I play it too much now, so I'm going to pick The Electrician from Night Flights, which is kind of really the Walker Brothers more than Scott Walker, isn't it?
You're getting there.
Yeah, getting there.
Song called The Electrician, the choice of Katie Kim, who's with me in studio tonight. Just listening to that, Katie, you get, I mean, it is actually a Walker, you were right, it is a Walker Brothers song,
it's the last album they made together.
Clearly heading into later Scott territory,
yes,
there, isn't
a lot
it?
Of Scott Walker
it's all happening there. I'd say, as an artist yourself, it's, you know, when you come across someone who has such an interesting and strict aesthetic as someone like Scott Walker, it must be fascinating, though, to think about his processes and what he's about, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose also as well, just to be able to have that kind of a crew around you that's willing to follow every crazy idea that you want them to follow and build boxes so that they can just punch them once or twice. I think that's kind of an amazing.
Have you ever had that?
Think of it. Haven't, not yet.
Yeah, but you've worked with a lot of really good people, though. I've known, you know, you've worked with people like Habs, you know, and really interesting musicians. There's a lot of them about, and they're all, you know, they're not beneath the radar, but they're not as well known as. You know, some of the, they're not as well known as the well-known bands.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, there's a set of musicians out there now doing some really interesting stuff.
Yes.
David Kitt, you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Harcourt, you worked with him.
Very briefly, yeah.
And in terms of a well-known band, you worked a lot with the Waterboys, actually.
Yes.
What do you do with them?
Actually, speaking as well, like, absolutely not putting Mike in the same category as Scott Walker. But I mean, as far as perfectionism and professionalism, that was my first experience of working with somebody who really knew what they wanted and wanted it and surrounded themselves by people who really wanted to give it to him as well. I was playing a show in the Button Factory, I think, and he was there at the show and ended up buying a vinyl of mine. And then when I moved to Canada briefly. While I was over there, he emailed me and asked me would I just be part of his Yeats show that he was doing. So that's what I was doing with him.
Let me ask you about something else you've done more recently. The work you did with Crash Ensemble.
Yes.
Now, they're a hugely talented bunch of Irish musicians who maybe a lot of people actually haven't heard of if they're not working in that sort of orbit, but they have a global reputation at this stage, an internationally recognised outfit. And tell me what brought you and the Crash Ensemble together. What was all that about?
Well, I never thought... Well, first of all, I had seen Kate Ellis play cello with Laura Sheeran. Myself and Laura released a 7-inch together a good few years ago now. And I went to one of her shows and Kate Ellis was playing cello with her. And I just thought she was a stunning cello player. She always seems to go for these... I suppose on a cello, just the most unexpected turns that you would imagine a player to go to. You don't, you know, when you're listening to something, you imagine them to go to a particular place, but Kate never goes to that particular place. She always seems to go the left of field. So anyway, that's how I became aware of Kate Ellis. And then I understood that she was part of the Crash Ensemble. Had seen them play here and there, but never really thought that it was a viable idea that I would actually be able to get to work with them because they're so busy there and they're constantly working. And I think they had worked a lot in the classical world, but were trying to kind of break out into more contemporary scene. So
Without being the string section behind a singer, that's not the job. Do
no,
you know what I mean? And
no.
And that's not what you wanted either. It's not that you were looking for a string quartet to make things seem prettier.
No.
You know, so it's not as straightforward as you might think to have a singer
and
something like the Crash Ensemble come together.
Yes, because I was just as big a fan of, like, I was a huge fan of them. How it all worked out, well, Barry, who's my manager, he really helped. And Sean Clancy, who is kind of a friend of mine, who is also a composer, offered to arrange Salt orchestrally with them, and they said that they'd be up for doing it. And so it was through other people that this happened, because I think I would have been way too shy to try and approach them about it, or thought that it was just out of my reach, you know. So that happened, and they decided to do it. And we've played it now, we've done it live 3 times, and I feel extremely lucky that it's happened. And I'm also hopefully Kate is also going to be very much involved in the next record that I'm in doing at the moment as well.
Can I pick something from it now to play? Do you mind?
Absolutely, go for it.
Taking some of your time here. Wide Hand.
Yeah, sure. Yeah?
And that's Katie Kim there with Crash Ensemble. And that project, Salt, if anybody wants to hear that music, Katie, it's digital only, is that right?
Yes, I'm sorry.
No,
yes,
don't apologise. The young people today do this all the time. Digital only.
You can get it on Bandcamp, listen, stream it on Bandcamp. Yeah.
And it's been performed live 3 times, and that's kind of what it's about, isn't it? It's about performing this thing, and it's something you could regenerate at various times, yeah.
I also had to be persuaded now to release this as an album, because I'm not a huge live album fan, really.
Yeah.
Personally, for myself, I dread the thought of, like, sometimes sound men in the past would go, oh, I recorded it, do you want me to send it on to you? Go, no, absolutely not. No, thank you.
Fair enough. Now, a couple of times in the course of this interview, when you were talking about music, and once about the Laurie Anderson documentary, you said you were in floods of tears.
Mm.
Do you cry a lot listening to music?
See, because I suppose I'm only listening to music that I... I suppose I'm putting music on that I like to listen to, and if it is something like that, then I will cry to it, I suppose. But do I cry a lot to music?
I've just said it a few times.
Do get emotional at music, I suppose. See, I'm after saying it a few times because this is my list, and my list is songs that are precious to me.
Yeah.
I'm an absolute baller at movies and films and documentaries. If there's any kind of emotion involved,
Do you cry during nature programmes?
If something has been killed or maimed or murdered, yes.
It tends to happen.
It happens in nature.
There were outrageous scenes last night involving a hyena and a leopard.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine what happened there.
Big cat week on National Geographic.
Right.
Yeah, just stay away from it if I was you.
Okay. I'm not a huge cat fan anyway, so I'm all right.
So your next choice, Katie, is Rue.
Mm.
Now, tell me about Rue. Because this ties in with one of our previous guests on this Sunday night
Rady,
special.
Yes.
Rady Pete.
I can't tell you a lot about Rue, because their output hasn't been as prolific as Lancome's, obviously, or whatever. But Rue is Rady, Rady Pete Cormack on fiddle and Brian Flanagan on banjo. And my first interaction with Rady actually was seeing Rue. It wasn't Lancome, or as there is known at the time, Lynch. But I saw Rue and they were playing Katie Cruel, and Rady's voice, it for me is that you just get this primal, just everybody just stopped and looked and listened and was just stunned by, you know, just the voice coming out of Rady. And then also just Rue in general, and especially what Rady and Cormac and Brian can get together as far as this, it's going to tie in nicely next with KTL and the drone element. I just think that it's a really primal sounding song, and I'm a huge Rady fan, and I just think, and I also actually I got to perform this with Rady and Cormac at the recent shows that I've been doing with, well, that we did with together, and it was a good time for me to get to play this. It was kind of like fangirl asking, can we play the number one hit with the lads and get to do it at the shows? But
okay, so this is Rue and Katie Cruel.
Yeah.
And that's Katie Cruel. Very fine song. We often play Karen Dalton's version of it on the programme here, but that's from Rue, which is Rady Pete, the choice of Katie Kim, who's with me in studio tonight. So, Katie, in an ideal world now, musically speaking, what would you be doing? Would you be on a stage singing to a crowd of people? Would you be at home making music slowly and methodically? Would you be touring the world with a huge band? What ideally would you like to do?
Ideally, it would be lovely to be able to make records and... I mean, I'd love to get into the world of maybe trying to approach soundtrack work and composing and that kind of world, I think. But the live side of it may be last on my list.
Really, yeah.
I think still to this day hasn't really changed.
Yeah. And so it doesn't get any easier?
No, it gets easier. I mean, like I don't get stage fright really that much anymore. And the nausea has calmed down quite a lot over the years.
Your next choice is... KTL.
So this is KTL. I decided not to go for Sun O for this show.
Why
I decided
not?
To spare people. I don't know. Oh, well, first of all, I just think this song is absolutely phenomenal.
There's no judgment here.
None. I would like people to keep listening. But, okay, so this is like KTL, and this is Stephen O'Malley, obviously, who is, not obviously, but for people who are aware of Stephen O'Malley, he's kind of known as the drone king and... you know, part of a band called Sun O and Burning Witch and a lot of other doom bands.
That would have a connection with Lancome, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah, with the drone.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
And I think a lot of this connection as well comes through Spud, John Spud Murphy, who Lancome are working with and who has been in my band in the past and then also recorded Salt. And but he's a big drone fan, and he also I think Rady told me that he did introduce them to a lot of drone and got them really into it as well. But anyway, this particular track is by KTL, And this is Stephen O'Malley. I had to look this up and remember this because I couldn't remember the name of the other guy who was involved in it. But it is Peter Rayberg, yes. So he's kind of on a kind of computer music guy. And they got Johan Johansson to come in for this song. This is called Fill 2, but Johan Johansson came in to do the orchestration on it. And I really, I was really, Spud used to play this before my shows, before my shows used to go on, and I was just floored by it. And yeah, it's a...
Now, this is 15 minutes long.
It is 15 minutes long, but Stephen O'Malley's whole mantra is about deep listening and meditative music. And so that's
what
he's into.
What this... The service this might provide tonight is to introduce somebody to this kind of music because we can't play all of it, alas.
Okay, that's fine. So the first few minutes anyway, or the...
Here we go. And that's KTL. It goes on for another 11 and a half minutes, and I recommend if you've got the time and the space to check out KTL, that's called Fill 2.
You can get it on Bandcamp if you want to listen to it.
On Bandcamp, is that where it is?
Yes.
That's the choice of Katie Kim. I was going to call you Katie Cruel there for a second. Katie Kim, who's with me in studio tonight, picking all the tracks. We haven't a whole lot of time left, so let's just plow on with the music choices. Johnny Greenwood, are you a Radiohead fan?
Huge Radiohead fan. I was nearly going to go for a Thom Yorke piano thing, but I said, you know what? Like, you were never really here. Johnny Greenwood, I love the man. I think he's just a genius composer. And this film by Lynn Ramsey is amazing as well. And I could have just come on here and played the whole entire You Were Never Really Here soundtrack, honestly. But I had to pick one, so I picked this.
Okay, Johnny Greenwood. Music there from Johnny Greenwood, the choice of Katie Kim, who's with me in studio. That's Sandy's Necklace. And you're recommending that soundtrack to me, Lynn Ramsey.
The whole entire soundtrack. Yeah, I've
got
beautiful.
To check that out. I haven't heard that one, actually.
Yeah.
And before that, KTL or some of it. Now, your next choice, John Jacob Niles.
Mm-hmm.
You're the only person I've ever met who knows who John Jacob Niles is.
Okay.
Apart from Bob Dylan, who mentioned him on the documentary, the Scorsese documentary. And
that's where I learned
about him, yeah. And then I spoke to an old guy, a Belfast singer called David Hammond, who was in New York at the time. And I remember John Jacob Niles. He was an amazing singer. But after a while, it would get a bit too much.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because I was going to almost choose to play The Hangman, but then I did listen to it and went, OK, no, maybe it. But by the end, it does get a bit too much. But also, this is one of his original songs, and he was called the Dean of American Balladeers. You know, that's what he was known as. But he also did his own. He wrote his own songs as well. And Go Away From My Window is one of those songs that he wrote. And it's the one that does feature in that Bob Dylan documentary, actually.
Well, if you haven't heard John Jacob Niles before, you're in for something.
You're in for a treat.
Peggy Seeger there in a version of Henry Lee, and before that, John Jacob Niles and Go Away From My Window. Two very fine choices there from Katie Kim, who's with me in studio. We've time for one more, Katie, but before you go, I have to ask you what the plans are. What's next?
Plans are just in the process of writing the next record. And
will you take your time over that?
No, I don't want to take my time over it. I mean, it's been... Gosh, it's been nearly 3 years now since Alt's released. That seems to be the running cycle.
It would be unseemly to bring one out quicker than that.
I know. I think I get a little bit jaded after a record, and then I kind of just give it a break for a year and then go, oh, I'm missing something, and then have to go back to it again.
And do you know what this record is, roughly speaking, going to sound like?
I don't know. I have a rough idea. I would like to try and bring it back to basics a little bit and not go wild with effects this time. But we'll see. Things can change. With Kate, hopefully with Kate involved, I would like to work with her a lot.
Kate Ellis.
Yeah, I would like to. Time depending, I suppose. But yeah, we'll see.
Well, Katie Kim, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed the music you played tonight.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. And you want to finish with Nina Simone?
I want to finish with Nina's Rebel song, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Nina Simone. Good night.
You've been listening to a podcast of Mystery Train with John Kelly. Mystery Train hits the rails every Sunday to Thursday at 7 p.m. on 96 to 99 RTE Lyric FM.